What do you think?
That's the way that Jesus began the discourse, the dialogue that we listened in on this morning. What do you think?
Here in the passage that we're looking at, Matthew 18:12-22,
though he uses that introduction, that means to gain involvement, this isn't the first time nor the only time that he uses that. As a matter of fact, this "what do you think" he reuses repeatedly. In Matthew chapter 17, verse 25. "What do you think, Simon?" And then he presents the cause. I'm going to take a moment here and let everybody read the handout on the other side to see what's going on for a moment, because we just prayed about God being exalted on the earth, and I'm after that, and I'm going to let you join me here in what we're doing in the Jesus encounter. So there we go. "What do you think?" That's what Jesus had asked. "What do you think?" He said it several times. Those passages are the direct quotes of him saying it. "Simon, what do you think? What do you think of the Christ? Whose son is he?" Matthew 21:28. "What do you think?" He's gaining involvement. He's going after your thinking, my thinking, our reasoning. "Come, let us reason together." That's what God says. And here on earth, Jesus picking up on what God said through Isaiah the prophet is doing the same thing. He uses the formula over and over and over. "What do you think about Christ?" And we'll see him do this. And he uses like phrases in other places. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 16. "Why do you call me good?" That's what Jesus said to the rich young ruler who came to me. "Why do you ask me what's good?" And in Luke chapter 10, he uses this question with a smart aleck who wanted to catch him. And he says, "Which of the three proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell in among robbers?" Do you notice what he's doing here? He is not commanding and forcing. He is gaining involvement so that we think with him. We're not distracted by him. We're not picked up on or by other things, but focusing attention on him. We're not picking up the surrounding environment, but cluing in on what he's doing. What do you think? He said it frequently. What do you think? As a matter of fact, he says it to us here in this segment. And actually, this part of Matthew 18 is of extreme importance to those who say they're believers and they belong his church. He only mentioned it twice in his whole lifetime. His church. My church. The church. Three times he uses the word, but he only mentions it two times. Three usages. Twice. Here in this one. Come. Church. Let us reason together. What do you think? We're going to set out before you here this morning three segments which come from one sequential event in the life of Christ. Three segments of it. And I want you, as you look at these three, to think, how do these fit together? Do they fit together? Some don't think they fit together. What do you think?
What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go to look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he is happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that did not wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should be lost.
If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, have won your brother over. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan. Or a tax collector.
Then Peter came to Jesus and asked,
Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Up to seven times.
Jesus answered,
I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times.
So what do you think? If you haven't turned with me yet to Matthew chapter 18, I'd like you to turn there now. One after another, we separated them into the segments because a lot of people don't think they fit together. Commentators, Bible commentators that I've read, here, one, an exegetical commentary, Alfred Plummer, pretty well known. It is probable that in this chapter we have a number of Christ's sayings which Matthew has grouped together in a way of his own. Holy. So is this random? Random things Jesus also said and did. That's what Alfred Plummer, there's connecting thought. What do you think? What do you think? As a matter of fact, that's our title for this morning. What do you think? At least part of the title. Is there any way these fit together? How do they fit together? What is he going after here? What's he talking about? I want to say to you what I think. And what I think is obviously what Matthew thought, because Matthew put them all together in a sequence, one event after another, Jesus did. And what I think is that this is all built around a theme that the Lord wants you to think and reason with him together about. Here's the theme. Be a church activist or not. I intend to demonstrate that to you from what Jesus said, because what we get here is a download of what Jesus said from Matthew. Every one of them is what he said in sequence. Now, when I say activist, you probably have some images that come to mind. Activists, you know, that one, as a matter of fact, I have to ask my family members, but I thought that one looked a little bit like my brother-in-law. Don't you think, James? He does. So are you thinking, rise up! Well, actually, what I'm thinking is a Jesus encounter. That's it. About being an activist. He was an activist. But it wasn't. Matter of fact, Matthew downloads the picture of Jesus the activist. What do you think? To be an activist, a church activist, or not? To choose or to refuse? Well, it's not forced. You decide. Because we're going to take a look at this together. We're going to take a look at this. What do you think? And first off, we're going to take a look at the picture. Get the picture. First, it's getting the picture downloaded. Then, Matthew presents the practice, getting into the practice. Detail. Then finally, getting over your problem. My problem that keeps us from being active. Okay? That's the plan. Are you with me? Good. Some of you, I don't know, want to be an activist. Yeah. That's what I'm after. Plain up front, that's what I'm after. I don't want to be an activist. But not like, I like being a wallflower sometimes.
Right.
That's what I'm after. Concerning the church. So, let's get the picture. It's Jesus' call and Jesus' challenge to reason with him. What do you think? He said it. Matthew chapter 18, verse 1, at that time the disciples came to Jesus And you remember Dr. Stewart covered this well for us last week, this first 11 verses of this chapter. So, Lord, I mean, you know, who's really doing it here? I mean, who's outstanding for you, your kingdom? I mean, who? Who's the greatest? And they came and they asked, Jesus that! Can you imagine? Jesus! You see, they hadn't been around long enough to realize that you really hold that inside, but you're never to say it. They said it. And you know what Jesus said. He had the child come to him. And he puts the child in the midst. And all those things that Dr. Stewart told us about being a child of God. A toddler. You ever play with a toddler? I've played with several toddlers over the years. Come on, you can do it. Come on, come to Dad. Come on, you can. They really think they can. And they do. Though that first one is kind of tough, you know? And they do. I remember Elijah's first steps. We were all at the house when he was doing them, and he was cheered. He's never been cheered like that in any other step since. That's what it is. It's a toddler. You have to become like that with your Father in heaven. That's what Jesus says to him. And he goes on. You know, these toddlers, be careful that you don't cause them. You don't cause them to stumble. That when you're there and you're holding out your hand and you're cheering them on to come to you, that when they start, you don't go, phew! Because that's the image that he gives of sin. Your sin and my sin and its impact on the toddler. You're kicking the legs out from under. Because I tell you, it is better to cut off your hand, to gouge out your eye, than to engage in sin like that and to regard them lightly like that. It's better. It's better. Do that instead of going to hell for your sin and facing the consequences with God of that action. That's the summary of what Jesus said, and it's right on the heels of that. That Jesus says, what do you think? And it's a call. It's a challenge to reason with him. What do you think? And then Matthew downloads the picture. You ever download a picture on your computer? Sometimes it comes up really slow. You ever notice that? I was downloading one the other day, and I just got up and left the computer. Came back a little later, and it was progressing. At work, sometimes what I have to download on some images and some, it's like, Okay, this is a download, and you don't have to wait. Jesus delivers it right away on the heels of what I just went through was, he delivers it. This is the picture. Get the picture. Get the picture. This is the picture. And he gives us the picture. Downloaded by Matthew. There's a guy. If there's a guy who has 100 sheep, this is all he has. This is it. He has 100 sheep. This is his livelihood. This 100 sheep. This is how he sustains himself and his family. This 100 sheep. 100 sheep. That's what he has. 100 sheep. And if this 100 sheep, he's on a mountainside, and one of these 100 sheep goes astray, and he doesn't know where it is, and he can't find it. When he looks around, he doesn't see it. He doesn't know the direction he went. It's just not here. What's he going to do? This is it. This is his whole life. I mean, he's got 100 sheep. Jesus says, look with me what he says. Does he not leave, verse 12, the 99 on the hill and the mountains and go in search of the one that went astray? Now, it's not that he says, well, you guys fend for yourself. He takes off. You know, he's going to secure those 99, maybe in a sheepfold, maybe with a gatekeeper there, like Jesus talked about. Maybe there, maybe he gets a family member to watch the sheep. Maybe he has several of them and brings up the whole family as he goes off. But he's going to leave those 99, and he's going to go out after that one, because that one is just that important to this shepherd, that all he has is 100 sheep and one is gone. He's going to go out, and he doesn't know where it went, but he leaves them to go get the one. You can get that picture. Anybody here not get that picture? If you don't get that picture, raise your hand so we can all look at you and say, you don't get the picture. Nobody wants to do that. I'll talk to you later. When he goes out looking for the sheep, he doesn't know where the sheep is. He doesn't know which way it went. Because at verse 13, Jesus presents the picture like this. He says, and if he finds it. If he finds the sheep. If he does. Okay, let's bring this up to date. Let's say that you just went to the ATM machine and you took out a large sum of money because you had to pay in cash a certain bill that was due, and the arrangement was that, and you took out the large sum and you put it in your wallet, in your purse, or in your pocket, and then you took off, and you went, and it's about 15 minutes later, and you're arriving at the place where you need to pay it, and you can't find it. You reach to your back pocket, and it's not there. You open your purse, and that wallet isn't in it. And what you gonna do? How are you going to feel? This is a sizable amount. And you are going to start clicking backward. I know I put that in here. I had to put that in here. And you kind of recall this thing, and you're going to go back and retrace your steps, and you're going to relive it in your mind over and over, and you're going to go to those sites that you were at, and you are going to look, right? Okay, let's remove that from being an inanimate object, even though that'd be very valuable, and make it a living object. Make it a child, a toddler that you're watching with a couple others for some folks that you know. And you got them all together, and you turn around and do something, and you look around, and you count three, and they're supposed to be four. What you going to do? You're going to secure these three, and you're going to go after that one. Aren't you? Aren't you? That's what you're going to do. That's what you're going to do. And you're not going to know. It is. this and you don't know where to look. Where did I lose this? Where did he go? Where did she go? And you're going to be searching. And when you see him, when you see her, when you lay eyes on that wallet that dropped out at the curb where you stepped into the car and you see it laying there, what are you going to do inside? It's going to be like, thank the Lord. It's going to be like, woo! Right? That's the rejoicing. That's the rejoicing. So, Jesus says, verse 14, so it is not the will. There's more rejoicing, he says, over finding this one missing one than the three that were still there. And if one of them would have been the missing ones, you would have been just as rejoicing as finding that one. Because it's the missing. It's the stray. And so, the will of the Father, he says, getting a picture of God, downloading the picture. And by the way, Matthew isn't the only one that downloads this picture. Dr. Luke does the same thing in Luke chapter 15. He downloads the same picture. Little bit different, little different circumstances. Same story Jesus used. So, verse 14, it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. Toddler, right? Well, yeah. But remember how this whole picture goes. Do you remember how this whole picture goes? Don't, verse 10, despise, don't think against one of these little ones. Don't against. That's what actually the word is when he says despise. Don't think down on them. And you remember, as you back this thing up, that that thing of having sin is what causes them to get in trouble and for you to think against them, to you think down on them. And you remember, as you back this thing up into those verses 11, that he's talking about us becoming like children. Look at it at verse 3. He says, truly I say to you, unless you turn away from your confidence in yourself and become like the child, that little toddler who expresses this implicit trust in his daddy, you'll never enter the kingdom. But do you see who he's talking about? There's the children here. This is an interface. This is an interface that Jesus is doing. He uses the images of children and he interfaces the idea of God's children. And we're to be like those toddlers to your Father who is in heaven, who puts out his hands and says, come on, you can do it. Come to me. And we do, and we can. And unless you turn from you and your good ideas about how this life needs to go, and to him, you're not ever going to enter the kingdom of heaven. You're not ever getting in. But when you do, and you grow in this trust, this trusting in what God says, every word defining your life, I want you to know you'll be great in the kingdom of heaven. That's what Jesus is saying. Say this with me. You'll be great. Say it with me. You'll be great in the kingdom of heaven. That's what you'll be. That's what you'll be. That's what you'll be. It's trust in him. Trust. And this picture is an interface. It's an interface of the kind of activism he's looking for. It's the activism of all of us together and one goes astray. And what do? I never liked him anyway. I don't care. She was always so. That's what we do. Is that what you do? Well, it depends. You're right, it depends. It depends on our perception of their personality and how valuable it is to us. You know what it really depends on? It depends on God's perception of there being a person and how valuable that is to you. Activism is what I'm going after. Okay, let's go on then. See this? You know, sometimes I have to think ahead. Well, this is ahead. It's the future. It's what's going to be. Well, according to Elio Motors, it's what's going to be. I showed this to Nate the other day. Actually, the reason I'm looking at this is because this is a brand new motor vehicle that cost $6,800 and gets 87 miles per gallon and has a 5-star crash rating. And I am thinking about my daughter needing to drive to school, who turns 18 next, well, 2 months from now. Okay? So, I am thinking ahead. 3-year warranty, 5 crash rating. Brand new, $6,800, made in America, Louisiana to be the place, in an old GM plant. I get in trouble sometimes for thinking ahead. What are you doing? The other day, well, it's been a while ago, I said to my wife, you know, we need to really think about replacing this van. I like this van. I really don't want to replace this van. About a month and a half later, the cylinder went out of it. I didn't think about it. You told me not to. I was thinking about it. We really need to replace this van. You see, I get in trouble sometimes for thinking ahead. Guess what? I'm going to do it anyway because it's my job. It's my job to think ahead. I want to tell you this. This, which we're going to look at, is not my job only. I'm an activist. I better be an activist for the church. But it's not my job only. This is your job. This is your job too. Connect the next picture. Here we go. Getting the picture. Now getting into the practice. What practice? The practice of going after a straying sheep. The practice of going after a child of God who's wandered away, gotten into sin. One of these who transferred their trust from themselves and their almighty ability to think this through and to make a great escape, and transferred their trust to God and His so great of a salvation. And you know that is for eternity, and it is for time too. Amen? It fits both. This is an interface. It is your life and your eternity interfaced. Getting into the practice of going after the straying sheep, the lost toddler, the missing, valuable, valuable, valuable commodity. Remember, he's been talking about sin. Missing the mark is the word he uses here, and that is the straying. When he interfaces this. So, getting into the practice, and he does this. Jesus' call and Jesus' challenge to action with him. We're beyond reasoning now. He's given you the reason with the picture. Now we're into the call to join him, his call to action. And he says it like this, verse 15. If your brother, this does not mean somebody who you are raised with having the same last name. This is not flesh and blood. It could be. Could be. But he's going beyond the flesh and blood. He's talking about your brother, a fellow child of God, a fellow toddler with God. If your brother goes astray, he misses the mark, and he sins, against you. What do you do? That's kind of the progression here. I'm mad, and then I cry about it for myself. That scum! What a Christian! You call that being a Christian? If that's a Christian, Christian. You're so Christian. Christian. That's not Christian. Christian ought not act like that. Is that Christian? You heard those kind of statements? Oh, yeah. 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 I heard those. What do you do? Call to action. Activist. Activate the church. This is DEPCOM 3. Okay? That's what this is. This is DEPCOM 3. Okay? What do you do? Here's Jesus' plan of action for his kid. And there are four parts to this. And he's going to make sure we don't miss any. Okay. Go to him. This is step one. Go and tell him his faults. Don't go and tell your best friend his faults. Don't go and tell your mother and your physical brother his faults. Tell who? Why do we have such a hard time with that? Because it's so hard. It's hard to look at them and say, you know what you did? You know how this came across to me? Here, let's play this out. You're walking through the hall and you see Pastor Tom come by. Okay. Tom Stewart. Come by. You know, he's just been to Ecuador. He's got a trip coming up. And when Tom comes by, he's moving down the hall, and you haven't seen him since he got back from his trip. And you go, hey, Dr. Stewart. And he goes, and he goes it off. And you're sitting there and you're looking at him. Well, that jerk. I mean, see if I go out of my way for him again. And you kind of carry that around and you go home and you tell your wife or you tell your husband and then you tell somebody in the church, you know, that Dr. Stewart has really, since he's been on this trip, you know, he kind of, who are you? God. What a jerk! And when you tell them, they lovingly say to you, well, you need to go and tell him. And you know, I'll check with you next Sunday to see if you did that, okay? Matter of fact, we'll meet here, right here, at this spot next Sunday, and I'll see if you did that. Okay? Well, you under the come let us reason together of your brother here, who has sent you back, you go up to Dr. Stewart. You say, oh, hey, Dr. Stewart, that's really a nice looking shirt you have there. And your shoes. Are those new? Really nice. They look like they do so well in this snowy weather. Hey, let me tell you, his shoes do not do well in snowy weather. That's they look like they do so well. Well, it's nice to see you today. And there's your brother over there standing there. Oh, yeah, there's something else. You know, last week when you just got back and we're going through the hall, why did you snuff your nose at me and stick it up in the air and take off when I was trying to talk to you going out of my way? I want you to know that I really carried that all week. I thought, you know, this is my elder and he doesn't even like me. And Dr. Stewart goes, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, when I was overseas, I caught this cold and I was having some bloody mucus coming out. And that was coming, I could feel it coming out of that nostril, and I sniffed like that to get it back up so it wouldn't kind of, you know what I mean? And I took off to get to the restroom so I could get the, I am so sorry. Will you please forgive me for that? And you're going to go, oh, yeah. But I want you to know, it's the benefit of the one-on-one. It's the benefit of the one-on-one. And this guy over here is going to send you now around to those others who you have talked to, because you've got an offense to deal with. You've won him. You've won him. You won him. You've gained him. That really works. Really works. But let's say he did this. Let's say he did, you know, that's really what you deserve anyway. And he walks off. And you go back and report it. And so this one who loves you says, okay, I'll go with you. We'll get somebody else. If he doesn't listen, step two. Take one or two so that you can have two or three witnesses and that all the evidence of this may be established. Now, it doesn't mean evidence is to the stuck up in the air, nose sniffling. It's evidence of the response that our dear doctor has to this. You know, I'm so glad it's him, aren't you? That's right, and you're right about me now. So, I go with you, and you pick up somebody else. Matt. We go back, since we're talking from Matthew. And you present the case again. And Doc has the opportunity to say, you know, I have been copping an attitude. I need to hear. He has the opportunity to say, forget you. I'm living this way. This is where I'm going. This is what I'm doing. And I'm not going to change it. Okay? And can I tell you this? I've had it both ways. I've had it come down both ways. It's called digging their heels in. So, if they listen, verse 16, but if they don't, here we go. If he doesn't listen to them, step number three. at the church. Activated. It's church time. Are you following me here? Let's pick it up. But if he does not, verse 16, listen, take one or two with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it, verse 17, to the church. Now, what is this? I want you to know that this is not my job. It may be my job when it happens to me. It may be my job when you come to me. And let me tell you, often I've been in on this job. Often I've initiated this job. But this isn't my job. This is your job. But when it comes to the church, then I'm in on this job. I'm in on this job. Because if it's going to come to the church, and if I'm going to shepherd the church, then I'm going to know where this is at for the sake of the church. And this one, and the 99. So, you come. Two or three establish this. This is clear. Then we go to the church. And we say, our dear brother has dug his heels in on a matter of imminent importance. And that is relationship and body. Therefore, we are, as a body, going to call him to repentance. And by the way, this could be a her, right? And if he doesn't, and we'll give him this amount of time, then I want you to know, verse number 17, that we will consider him or her as being an unbeliever, and they have betrayed like a tax collector. Are you with me on that? Now, I want you to know that this isn't a make-believe story. This is the practice that Jesus is calling us to. And I want you to know that we do this. We do this. And we haven't just done it once. We've done it as often as it's necessary. And we've had it go both ways. To choose to go along with God or to refuse to go along with God. And I want you to know this. Either way, he's exalted. And he will be. He will be. Tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen to the church, then we regard him as being an evangelism field. Somebody to reach for Christ, either as a Gentile unbeliever or as a betraying tax collector who's turned against his own. What do you think? What do you think? It's how Jesus started this thing. What do you think? Are you really in on this? Is he really calling you to this? Could you really do this? Are you a sheep? Are you a child of his? That's the picture. If you are, that's the way it goes. Now, when he said the church, did he mean the church? Some people say, well, this is before the church was here. So he couldn't have meant the church. So this doesn't apply to the church. Did he say the church? He said church. Does he know the church is yet to be built? Back up with me to verse or chapter 16, okay? Chapter 16 of the book of Matthew. Chapter 16. And in chapter 16, Jesus, at verse 16, has been asking them a question. Can you imagine that? Him asking them questions? Now, why did he ask questions? He asked a question to gain involvement with them. Come, let us reason together. So Jesus asked a question. Look at verse 13. He asked the question first time, who do people say the Son of Man is? And they gave him a response. But Jesus asked again, verse 15, but who do you say that I am? And Peter replies, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Verse 17. Jesus answered Peter, and he said, blessed, benefited are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, Peter, that on this rock, what's the next phrases? I will build my church. That's the only other time in his whole life he mentions it. And he just mentioned it a little bit previously to what we're looking at here. And he said, this is a future thing because I'm going to do this in the future. This is a future thing. I will build my church. And then on the practice of the church, when they're straying, this is how we do it. This is how we do it. And by the way, the same thing he said the first time he mentioned the church, he says again the only second time, ever time, again he mentions the church when he was here on earth. Look what he says. And I tell you, you're Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not stand against it. I will give you, the church, the keys of the kingdom of heaven. The way to open the door. And whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Now, I want you to go back to Matthew 18. Because in Matthew 18, the second time he mentions the church, and he uses it twice, the second time he mentions it, look at what he says, verse 18. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Do you think he knows what he's talking about? Some of you don't know. Let me ask this again. Do you think Jesus knows what he's talking about? He's talking about the church. He's talking about you as the church. He's talking about you as the church being active and doing what he's called us to do. And this is of great authority because this is agreeing with God. And it is conveying to people clearly on earth that they are bound to a sin, and this sin is going to be bound to you, and you're getting it on earth, and it's going to be done in heaven that way. Now, this isn't the church concoction. This is the church listening to her Lord and communicating what the Lord has said. And this light becomes so clear. And I want you to know this. This is like so neglected. And this is like so needed. So that people on earth get the picture of where they're at with God, or else just let them chop off their hands and their eyes and everything else, because that would have been better than them going to hell and you're not telling them. Amen? This is a brother. This is somebody who's around who strays. It's binding. It's not our idea. It's not our power. It's conveying what the Lord did. And this doesn't like it has to be a King Kong congregation that he's talking about here. Okay? Because look what he says. Again, I say to you, verse 19, if two of you agree on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For wherever two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them. Guess who the King Kong is here? It's God, and it's two of us in his name who are in on this, and we're going to do this. And let me tell you, if you've been to a church that wouldn't touch this, I don't care how big that church is. If it's a church of two and they're doing it, that's where the Lord is. That's where the Lord is. So, what do you think? What do you think? Is this something we really ought to do? And let me tell you, we got no option. He's the Lord of the church. It's going to be His church. We do what He wants. Amen? Do I always like doing this? Oh yes, I sit in my house and say, who do I get next? I can't wait till it comes up. Are you kidding? I usually have to fight with my soul about this. But He's the Lord of the church and I know the pictures. And I see the practice. There's only one thing left. I got to overcome the problem. Let's do that. Getting over the problem. Peter had the problem. He knew it. It's mine. So then, after this was all said, Peter comes up to Jesus, kind of got Him by himself. He said to Him, Lord, verse 21, how often do I have to go through this? How often does He sin against me? And He owns it. I understand it sniffles. And He turns and I forgive Him. How often? You know, the rabbis said three times. Peter's question, oops, went too far. Oops. Three times? That's what the rabbis said. Based on Amos and those passages, they said three. Peter's going over that. He knows that seven is a divine number. I mean, 7 days of creation, seven spirits of God, seven this in the Bible. It's seven. How many of you know that seven is kind of like a woo number? How many of you know that? You know that? Well, if you don't, I'm telling you. Seven is a woo divine number. Are they all divine? Well, God made them all, but you see, He works in the threes and the sevens. Trinity and seven. So Peter goes, they didn't say three. I'm going to go over that. I'm going to seven. So he says, seven times? And Jesus responds to him with a call and a challenge to overcome the problem. This is the problem. This is the problem. This is the problem. I want you to know this is the problem. To forgive. Call and a challenge to forgive. Oh no, it's easy to forgive. Oh no, it's not easy. It's easy to act like we forgive. Oh yes, I'm to forgive. But then to really do what forgive says? Not to bring it up in your mind anymore and dwell on it. Not to tell of it to other people. Not to smell up the relationship down the road when you see them and when you interact with them. To forgive is the problem. Forgive. Jesus answered. What did Jesus say to him? What did Jesus say to him? I do not tell you seven, I tell you 70 times 7. If you notice in the film, they said 77. Actually, that comes from a translation that's rendered in the Genesis 4:24. It's carried over in the Septuagint, and some people pick up the 77. The expression is, it's 70 sevens. So it's not 77, it's 70 times the 7, which Jesus was going at. Ooh, this is infinite, 7, so how about 70 times those? 70 times 7. How about that? That's like really out there. Infinite. Amen? 70 times 7. That's how often you forgive him. And then Jesus illustrates this thing, which I'm not going to go into right now, with a great parable about an unforgiving servant. You know the parable? Unforgiving servant. If you don't know the parable, read it. It's the rest of Matthew there sometime, maybe today. Matter of fact, when the Super Bowl halftime is on, go read it. Missed the halftime? Yeah, missed the halftime. Go read it. If you've never read it before, Super Bowl halftime, go read it. All right. It's not a command of God that you do it then. I just put it out there. Be that important. And then Jesus ends the thing by saying how important it is to God. Look at verse 35. Also shall my heavenly Father do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from the heart. Can I tell you what this is? And if I choose to do this, then I join the Lord in what he's doing. Wow. It's good. Out of gratitude for what he did for us. But if I refuse to do this, can I tell you what this is? Can I tell you what refusing to do this is? Can I tell you? Good. Thank you. I want you to know just flat out this. It's because you are a completely unloving person. That's why. You just don't have the love of God in you. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5 says this. Love does not take into account, doesn't keep a track list on the wrongs suffered. And that's what you're choosing. It's completely unloving. I'm mad at you. You know, I have people in our congregation who tell me that. I'm mad at you. I get mad at you sometimes. Let me give you a reason to be mad at you. If you don't become a church activist, it's because you don't comprehend the love of God for you, and you don't love other people. You love you. If you choose, the love of God grows based on what he says. If you refuse, it's all about you. Oh, and by the way, the Lord too, because it says here that that unforgiving, refusing person, you read that, he says he refused. In anger, the master in that parable delivers him over to the torturers so that they go through hard things in this life until they learn to forgive their brother from the heart. And Jesus says that's what God the Father is going to do to every one of you who doesn't do this. I didn't make that up. Jesus said that. We live. It's our problem. What we carry in our hearts. Our unwillingness to do it God's way. And what we carry in our heart after what he did for us. Christ went and paid for this too. Trust him with it. Trust him like a toddler. Come to him. Trust him. What if they sin? They're stray, go get them. How do we get them? I can talk the church to do it. And if I don't, you don't go 70 times 7 on this? God will teach you. Christ alone. We got two songs. First one, Christ alone. Second one, brand new one. You choose.